From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. There are now 173 charter schools in North Carolina after the General Assembly lifted the cap of 100 in 2010. The number of public charter schools soared. In the past 4 years, four new charter schools opened in Wilmington alone, putting the total at six. If approved, a seventh, the Wilmington School of the Arts, will open in the fall of 2019. A recent study published by researchers at Duke University and the University of Rochester finds that of the seven North Carolina districts studied, all of the county charter schools accrued negative fiscal impacts, with one district citing a loss of $500 to $700 per pupil. According to the Star News, Tim Markley, superintendent of New Hanover County Public Schools, estimates a loss of close to $500,000 during one academic year from students returning to public schools from charters. But some charter schools show better test scores when compared to their public school counterparts. And parents who choose charter schools say they appreciate the smaller class sizes and the ability of charter schools to be more innovative with their lesson plans and teaching models. Some proponents of the charter school model characterize charter schools as essentially having the perks of private school without the tuition. With us to explore some of the questions about charter schools and the impact on traditional public schools are Lori Roy. She's director of the Cape Fear Center for Public Inquiry, a charter school in Wilmington. She has served as executive director since 2012. Before that, she taught public school in Brunswick County, and it's actually the Cape Fear Center for Inquiry. Lori Roy, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also with us today, Robert William Smith, the Murphy Distinguished Professor of Education at the Watson College of Education at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Professor Smith's research includes studying North Carolinians' attitudes and perceptions of charter and traditional public schools. Robert William Smith, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we're inviting your questions on this Wednesday. Do you appreciate the increased choice of charter schools? Do you think charter schools are negatively impacting the traditional public school system? How did you decide where your child would go to school? What factors drove that decision? Give us a call on this Wednesday and tell us about it at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Robert William Smith of UNCW's Watson College of Education, give us a brief history of charter schools in the state, sort of how they started and what the original intent was behind them.
Well, the original intent behind charter schools was something that I characterize as being beneficial. Public schools were viewed as being rather staid in their approaches, that they hadn't shown much innovation. And so charter schools were created with the idea that these would be experimental schools, that a chance for schools to try out different approaches to teaching and learning, and that this would then help to inform traditional public schools. So the idea behind charter schools, I think, was beneficial. However, since they've been implemented, rather than charter schools serving to inform and work in collaboration with traditional public schools, charter schools have really come to compete with traditional public schools. So the idea of being able to learn from charter schools has not occurred.
And we're going to take apart as we go along why that competitive model seems to exist. But first of all, Lori Roy with Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, how did this particular school get started? What was the impetus behind it? What were people trying to do in this community?
So CFCI is one of the oldest charter schools in the state of North Carolina. We were founded in 2000 by professors from UNCW as well as teachers from New Hanover County. And parents who all just wanted to try something different. We are a school of inquiry, so we really focus on teaching students the process of inquiry, not just giving them answers and resources and material. You know, we give them kind of enough to pique their interest so that they can start asking questions, learning how to research, finding the answers to their questions. It stimulates that will and desire to learn. And that's, as Dr. Smith was saying, that's kind of the foundation of what charter schools were initially designed. It was to have a purpose or a charter, a mission, where they're focusing on something, but then taking that and teaching others. And so at CFCI, almost 20 years, 18 years ago, these teachers and professors came together to create a school that's just trying something different. And over time, we've developed from a K-5 school into a K-8 school and have been performing very successfully since that time. We collaborate and teach students. We collaborate with UNCW. We have interns who rotate through our building. And a lot of us.
And so you're saying students who are studying at interns, UNCW become teachers come to your school to do internships.
Yes, yes. We're one of the PDS schools with UNCW and really value our relationship with the university. We also are connected to other schools, both charter and public schools in other parts of the state and in South Carolina that have charters that are similar to ours, that are inquiry-driven.
And that's what your charter is based on. It's an inquiry-driven learning and teaching approach.
Yes.
And when we talk about charter schools, they can have all kinds of different focuses and different missions. That's just what yours happen to arise from. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the growth of charter schools in North Carolina and the Cape Fear region. And we'll get into the impact on traditional public schools in just a moment. With us today, Lori Roy, Director of Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, a charter school in Wilmington, and Robert William Smith, Murphy Distinguished Professor of Education at UNCW's Watson College of Education. You can call us during this live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Michelle from Bolivia, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Michelle, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am.
Hi. Did you have a question for our guests?
Not really a question. I just wanted to share that I am the headmaster at South Brunswick Charter School in Bolivia. We currently serve 378 K-5 children. We are a tuition-free public school providing a classical curriculum.
And Michelle, when you say classical curriculum, what is the charter about? What is the focus of your school?
Well, they begin in kindergarten with grammar. By second grade, they are diagramming sentences. It's amazing to come and see. We certainly invite anyone out in our direction to come into our classrooms. It's amazing when you walk into a second grade classroom and you see them diagram sentences with all of their parts and clauses. They begin cursive in third grade. They begin Latin in fourth grade. It's an amazing program. Another thing that we really focus heavily on is we teach each of our groups to mastery, and we make sure that we keep them at the correct level of instruction. So we may have a child in third grade who comes down to second grade for math, and the same child may go up to fourth grade for reading. So far as their curriculum level, we make those changes as their performance warrants it. It's a great program. We use direct instruction for our teaching method, and it's just amazing to come in and see the program in action. I think,
and Michelle,
as a parent myself, that's the best way to see it, is to come watch.
How long has your school been around?
We opened in 2014. We are the fourth in the family of the Roger Bacon Academy schools. We also have Douglas Academy downtown in Wilmington, Charter Day School in Leland, and Columbus Charter School in Whiteville. So we're the newest in that family.
Excellent. Michelle, thank you so much for your call. We're talking about charter schools and the growth in the Cape Fear region. Robert Smith from the Watson College of Education, one of the major criticisms of the charter school model in the state of North Carolina is that it somehow robs the traditional public school system of dollars. Is that your, would you characterize it that way? Is that the way we've got it set up right now?
Well, charter schools, they certainly take the, when pupils move to a charter school, they take the dollars which would have traditionally gone to the public schools in that district. So in
the
that
dollars
sense,
follow the student.
That's right. So in that sense, they do. And the impact of doing so varies depending on the district. If you've got a district such as New Hanover County with growing student enrollment, then the impact of that on the schools in New Hanover County is not quite as significant as if you're in a rural area where you have stagnant student enrollment. Every student who then moves to a charter school is taking money from the traditional public schools.
Now, on the face of it, wouldn't it be logical to say if there are 100 students in this public school and suddenly there are 92 because 8 of them have gone to the local charter school, it would make sense that you need less money to run that public school. What's the problem?
The problem is that the logic you presented is very simplistic, because if those 8 students all come from one class, it could impact the class size of one class.
And I'm going to ask you, this is more complicated. So we're going to get into this more deeply when we come back from the break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's an exploration of the growth of charter schools and how that growth may be impacting traditional public schools. Lori Roy of the Cape Fear Center for Inquiry and Professor Robert Smith of UNCW's Watson College of Education are here, and they're taking your questions on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. Hi there, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we're taking a closer look at charter schools in North Carolina, how residents see them as alternatives to traditional public schools, and why some opponents of charter schools say they rob traditional public schools of much-needed dollars. Does the funding model need to change? Here to help us explore these questions, Murphy Distinguished Professor of Education Robert William Smith at UNCW's Watson College of Education, and Director of the Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, Lori Roy. What do you think contributes to great schools and great public school systems? Give us a call today and tell us about it on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Professor Smith of UNCW's Watson College for Education, just before we went to break, you were explaining why my example was simplistic when it comes to the funding dollars. If 100 students initially go to a traditional public school, then say 8 of them switch over to a charter school and the dollars follow them, the funding follows the students, but you say that could still negatively impact the traditional public school that loses those dollars. Why?
In very different ways, depending on what you can imagine. Those 8 students, hypothetically, could all be from one class, i.e., third grade, in one teacher's classroom. So what you've impacted is the, if we had an enrollment of 25 students in that teacher's classroom, that enrollment has now dropped by 8 to 17. That would just impact one classroom. You could imagine, though, that those 8 students are not just from one class, that they're from different grades and different classrooms, which would mean that rather than it just impacting the viability of one class, it could be impacting the viability of several classes in terms of the meeting minimum enrollments for those classes to be able to be staffed by a teacher. And so rather than just one class, they can effect could be over multiple teachers. And that's really why it's not just a case of 8 students, it's how are those 8 students, where are they coming from, how's it going to impact the viability of those classes? And clearly, when we're just talking about 8, that's a small number.
Right.
Typically, charter schools are drawing 100, 200 students. That's when you begin to multiply and begin to see that it's the consequences are hard to plan for. And that's the other consideration with charter schools, that charter schools, traditional public schools, have no control over when charter schools are going to be created or when they may not be successful. So in terms of being able to do the long-term planning, which is really crucial, that's something which traditional public schools, in a way that they're being impacted in that manner.
Now, there's one wrinkle here that I've heard about from people in the public school system. When it comes to the dollars following the student, someone told me off the record that basically there are minimal requirements for attendance, so a student can start out in a charter school, find out after a month or two that it doesn't work, revert to the traditional public school in that district, but the charter school still has the dollars for that student. How common is that? Is that really an issue, or is that sort of minor when we're talking about the financing?
It's a major issue, and the most extreme cases of that have arisen with the establishment of online charter schools, which the state has been a strong supporter of until I think they began to look in more detail and to spend a bit more time looking at the impact of these types of schools in other states. As you can imagine, oftentimes in online courses, the research is pretty clear that you get a lot of interest early on, but if students are new to taking classes online or for whatever reasons they don't have the incentives to continue taking them, enrollment drops off pretty significantly, and that's what happened in, I believe we have 2 online charter schools in North Carolina, and as you can imagine, in terms of the funding date, maybe at the start of the course and the enrollment, if you look 20, 30 days in, there was a huge discrepancy between the number of students who were originally signed up and the number of students who continued or remained in the course, and of course that they were being funded based on the early enrollment rather than the actual number of students who continued in the courses.
So perhaps there's work to do on the funding model for mm-hmm. charter schools and traditional public schools. But they arose for a reason. And there was, and what was so, Lori Roy of Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, you explained in the first segment that this was really about allowing teachers to pursue these more innovative educational methods and eventually share them with traditional public school systems. Is that something
yes.
that so your school does?
To share in general. And I think you and I were talking earlier. Sharing is easier said than done right now, and a huge yeah. part of that is what's happened with politics with charter schools.
Why is that specifically? How is that challenging? Sharing your best practices
when you're viewed as competition, it's kind of hard to get, you know, on the docket to share something with New Hanover County Schools or to share. Now, I've been lucky just having connections and relationships with my with fellow colleagues in Brunswick County Schools. My mom was a principal. She just retired from Leland Middle School. And we've done a lot of collaboration with especially the North Brunswick schools. And then specific, you know, teachers that our teachers are connected with. We do try to go to conferences and present and we're connected with other charter schools. We're connected with CFI, which is a part of the University of South Carolina. It's a center for inquiry in South Carolina that's a great model that uses charter school with the university, which I know UNCW's looking at with the lab school that's kind of coming up here in Wilmington as well.
So you're actually sharing a lot of your best practices with these other educational institutions, but not necessarily New Hanover County Public Schools. There's not a pathway for that?
Well, we, and I don't think there's any one person to point fingers at there. As a school, we're our own school district. All charter schools are their own school district, and I think that gets forgotten sometimes. We're not only responsible for operating the day-to-day school, but we do everything that central office does. We have all the finance pieces, the management, the business side of things. We have to run the full gamut of exceptional services for our students with disabilities, and so it's not. Time is not something that's easy to come by for any educator anywhere. And so one of our goals, as we're looking at our next steps at the Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, is to start developing more opportunities for people to come to us and learn from us, educators from all over, not just charter schools or private schools or traditional public schools, for teachers to learn what we're doing. And there's so much that we can learn from others. So that's what charter schools were designed to do.
We're talking about the growth of charter schools in North Carolina and the Cape Fear region. With us today, Lori Roy, director of the Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, a charter school in Wilmington, and Robert William Smith Murphy, distinguished professor of education at UNCW's Watson College of Education. You can call us during this live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Churchill from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Well, thank you, and a great show as always, Ms. Hilburn. And a shout out to both of you, Ms. Roy and Watson School of Education, both tremendous educators. I want to make a comment as a parent. I have seen three children through the New Hanover County school system, and we opted for a charter school for our daughter from the fourth grade, because it became exceedingly clear to me that the entire curriculum in the public elementary school was geared almost exclusively to the lowest common denominator of student. Now, I don't want to take away from resources being applied to challenged students, but something I've seen over and over again watching young people come up through our grade schools is that they are not being prepared for university level education in any way, shape, or form until, like the IB program and things like that coming in. And the charter school provided my daughter in 4 years at CFCI, incidentally, with resources and techniques for learning that she continues to use and excel with, which she did not have made available to her in the public school system. And, I would love to hear some comment from both of you educators on why it is that instead of talking about the quality of education, we keep talking about dollars. Our children become our leaders, and they are the brilliant among them are who guide our civilization down the road. And I really think our public school system is way too concerned with the status quo and not nearly concerned enough with benefiting students and expanding their talents where those proclivities lie.
Churchill, thank you so much for that well-thought-out comment. Professor Smith, what would you say to Churchill? We have spent a lot of this discussion so far talking about dollars.
And that's a great comment, and I appreciate you providing that perspective to us. What you're referring to, I fundamentally agree with, and I think Lori also indicated that the original idea behind charter schools was that they could help inform, provide alternative approaches to teaching and learning for our traditional public schools. And to me, I am likewise a strong advocate that our public schools need to be the highest quality, serving all kids and providing children with engaging learning. And that, to me, should be for all our children. What we've got going on at the moment is that charter schools serve approximately 5% of kids in North Carolina. So we've got 95% of our children in traditional public schools. Clearly, the problem here is that going after the 5% of children in serving them with charter schools is not doing anything to address the 95% of children who are in our traditional public schools. And that's exactly the concern that you've raised. And it's one that I likewise feel very strongly about, that charter schools in some ways are a distraction from the much larger issue of what are we doing to help, to challenge, and to provide the same opportunities for our traditional public schools to be innovative in the way that we are encouraging our charter schools. The way we have it set up at the moment is almost like the charter schools are the good guys on the block and the traditional public schools are the failing ones. And what's happening year after year is the charter schools continue to eat away at the traditional public schools. My concern is, and my direction would be, that the legislature needs to put its attention and interest opportunities to our traditional public schools, rather than believing that through creating a small number of charter schools that we're going to be able to significantly impact our traditional public schools, which to me, they're 95% of the kids. That's where we need to be doing a lot more thought and putting a lot more energy in terms of what are we doing to encourage innovation within our traditional public schools in the same way we do with charter schools.
Robert Smith, is it axiomatic that more money means better quality education?
No, I don't think so whatsoever. Money clearly is fundamental in a lot of ways, but what we've spoken about in terms of the original idea behind how do you get schools to improve, one of the main ways you can do that is through schools collaborating, through sharing ideas. And that was the fundamental idea behind the creation of charter schools, that they could be a laboratory from which we could learn and that these schools could help inform our traditional public schools. That's what we've lost. We've got two separate camps at this point, charter schools, traditional.
And competing rarely, for the same dollars from the same pot, essentially.
Yes, and going about their business in separate ways. And that's right. The troubling part, rather than sharing ideas, working together, and addressing the larger, the 95% of kids, we're focusing on the 5%.
And Lori Roy of Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, you've made it really clear that collaboration is a big interest for you and your school, the Cape Fear Center for Inquiry. Can you just talk about, and I'm not asking you to throw traditional public schools under the bus, because as you've established, this is in your blood, your mother, your brother, you've all been part of that traditional public school system as educators. But what is different about Cape Fear Center for Inquiry in terms of what you're able to do with your students versus, did you feel hamstrung in any way in that traditional public school model?
So I had a wonderful experience as a public educator in traditional public schools when I taught at Leland Middle School and South Brunswick Middle School in Brunswick County. And it was, I had great leaders who let me be who I needed to be as a teacher. And I worked with colleagues who also shared some of those same views. The biggest difference for CFCI is that we all share those same views. And I will say I've never worked in a school with so many leaders. We have a full-on shared leadership model at our school. I don't make decisions in isolation unless they're safety-related and things like that, like the emergency stuff. But, you know, in terms of big picture, we are very much it's a school of leaders. That model in and of itself, the dedication and commitment that these teachers have to what they do every single day.
So are you saying that at Cape Fear Center for Inquiry, the staff is actually more engaged, more maybe inspired, encouraged to think creatively, so they do?
I don't know that I would say more engaged. I mean, there are amazing teachers doing amazing things everywhere. In traditional public schools, in charter schools, in private schools. Like the difference that I, from my previous experiences to where what we have at CFCI, is that we are all like-minded in what we believe about education and what we believe about the way children should learn. And so that creates kind of a different power. We also have a community that's driven by those same beliefs. You mentioned earlier when you and Dr. Smith were talking about the financial impact and the dollars and quality, going back to Mr. Churchill's comment, dollars, to me, it's not, when you look at the quality of teacher that you have working with kids and the parent involvement, those are things that at CFCI we have that we know some of our, you can't compare apples and oranges when you're comparing, you know, CFCI to a school that doesn't have those parental commitments just in and of itself.
And so we're getting a lot of questions now about students with disabilities and about diversity. So let's keep those separate for now and talk first about diversity and what the requirements are that charter schools have around representing the community in which they exist. Professor Smith, what are the requirements for charter schools?
Well, as you can imagine, when the legislature first created the concept of charter schools, they were aware of the danger of essentially if you allow parents or students to choose, that you could end up with highly selective student bodies.
And we will once again continue that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's a conversation about school choice, charter schools, and the impact of choice on traditional public school systems. When we come back, you'll have one more segment to get your comment into the live discussion on this Wednesday, 910-343-1138 or coastline at whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're taking a closer look today at how and why charter schools are on the rise across North Carolina, including here in the Cape Fear region. Answering your questions on this Wednesday, Murphy Distinguished Professor of Education Robert William Smith of UNCW's Watson College of Education, and Lori Roy, Director of the Cape Fear Center for Inquiry. And we want to hear from you on this Wednesday. What do you think works for charter schools? Which elements of charter schools need greater scrutiny, if any? You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline at whqr.org. This is the last segment, so you have just a few minutes left to get your own question in. Professor Smith, before we went to break, you were explaining how originally the General Assembly understood that segregation, particularly among different ethnic minorities, might naturally occur between African Americans and white students and Hispanic students and people of American Indian origin. And so they put in requirements.
That's right. So given the history of segregation, of racism in North Carolina, clearly the legislature were concerned that they didn't want white middle-class parents basically being given an easy opt-out of having to send their kids to more diverse schools and essentially creating all-white schools. And so when charter schools were created, there was the requirement that they had to reflect the diversity of the districts. In 2013, the legislature changed that requirement. They're no longer required to. The wording is must make efforts to reflect the diversity.
And what does that mean, must make efforts? What are efforts?
It means exactly what you suggested. it's open to wide interpretation. And if we look at the data in terms of enrollment in charter schools, we can see in North Carolina, charter schools are overly represented in terms of serving largely white students. And at the other end, they're overly represented in terms of serving black students. So we've got that sort of segregation happening in charter schools. The other key consideration that I'd want to point out in addition to race, and I think this is really crucial because all too often we want to compare charter schools with traditional public schools. The point, we've got apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. These are not, we're not comparing oranges here. And one of the main reasons for that is that charter schools are schools of choice. And so it's not only an issue around race, but also in terms of income. And again, if we look at the data on income, 50% of students in traditional public schools are in poverty, low SES.
Now, are you talking about North Carolina? Is that a statewide number?
Yeah.
Okay,
in
50% of students in traditional public schools are considered to be in poverty.
Yes, that's right. That's the average. In charter schools, that figure is 30%. So we know one of the main factors that affects how kids do in school is income. So given the discrepancy in income, if you add in the differences in race, it's you're not comparing apples to apples when we're saying how do traditional public schools and how do charter schools. The variables, the other key ones to consider is in terms of choice. Charter schools don't have to provide transportation. So another key factor in terms of who has the resources to choose to be able to send their child to a charter school, they don't have to provide lunch. Some do, but again, these are key differences. Charter schools, only 50% of charter school of teachers have to be licensed at a charter school. So,
well, that's just an interest, just from a mathematical point of view. That's an interesting point because if the per pupil funding follows the student, but a charter school has fewer financial requirements, then the traditional public school is already starting out with kind of a handicap, if you want to call it that.
Well, it's a little skewed because we don't get 100% of that funding. We don't get funding for building. We don't get funding for transportation. We don't get all of that funding. So that just to clarify, we it's not 100% of what is necessarily going into a traditional public school is following the child. So that's why charter schools don't typically have their own building unless they've saved up a lot of money or have a big donor or things like that where you have very innovative rented property typically.
Right. So. And when it comes to diversity, Cape Fear Center for Inquiry has a student body that in 2015-16 was 87% white, slightly more than 5% African American, 4% Hispanic. There are some kids who are of more than one ethnicity, mm-hmm. a couple of Asian students, and one child of American Indian heritage. How does Cape Fear Center for Inquiry approach the question of diversity?
Well, we certainly acknowledge that we don't have, our numbers show you, we don't have a large number of diverse in terms of ethnicity. We don't have transportation, so our parents do commit to bringing their children to school every day and picking them up. Our diversity kind of comes in with the quirkiness of our kids and the reason those families are choosing CFCI. We have seen an increase over the last few years, and since we moved, our new location is off of Wellington Avenue, so we have seen an increase in our minority populations. We're seeing that in our lower grades with our new location. We also have seen an increase in our students with disabilities over the years, although I imagine that's a trend across most public schools.
And so, so you're in a position where parents who have the transportation mm-hmm. are going to be the ones coming to you. And also, I would imagine that parents who have a higher income would be more inclined to think about making choices for their kids when it comes to schools. I mean, is that Is that sort of a marker of privilege in itself, Professor Smith, that a parent can make a choice about school? Does my question make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And you're right. When we think about choice, we tend to assume that choice is good. The capitalist market system that we live in, we like to be able to choose where we go and get our groceries from. So likewise, as we think about education, why shouldn't we have choice? Choice is good in this aspect of our economy. And that's why the legislature looks very favorably upon choice and charter schools because of the additional options. But as you said, we have to be very careful when thinking about choice in education. For one of the reasons, as you said, in terms of choosing knowledge of what is a good school and how do we make those decisions? And then if it's a case of do you have the transportation to be able to provide, or is that becomes a key variable, then you can see that we're moving from a system which is designed to serve all students, irrespective of income, of race, of special needs, to a system where you're providing choices which enables certain students to be pulled out from that system and to be provided with a different type of education.
You mentioned the word capitalistic, and I think it's important to point out that if we look through the lens of this study that was done by the Duke University researcher and the University of Rochester researcher talking about the negative fiscal impacts on traditional public schools, Rhonda Dillingham, executive director of the North Carolina Association for Public Charter Schools, responded to that study with, "The outflow of students that this study examined is due to one thing, families not being satisfied with schools that public school districts have assigned them to. Here's a simple solution," she says, "meet students' needs by running better schools." I mean, is there something inherently good, maybe, about an old model dissolving if it's not working, if it's not effective? Is there something we can...
Well, I have to agree. I don't like your wording in terms of characterization of public education. As we started, when charter schools were created, there was a recognition that we needed to do something different to think about how we could improve our traditional public schools. The analogy that I use with our students, with my students I teach, is that what we ended up with, it's a bit like a house, and you're looking at your house and thinking about, okay, you know, we've had the house in this, what could we do to improve it? What we've done with charter schools is we built a new porch on it. So the question is, how does a new porch benefit the house? And that's really the whole issue that we've said, that the opportunity, which was really vital to have collaboration, to be supporting new ideas and new innovation, which should be available to all public schools, not just to this small group of schools which serve only 5% of the total. And so we've got to embrace all our schools and provide all our schools with the incentives to be innovative, to have the opportunity to think differently about how we're serving our students. But at the moment, what we've done is created a model in which thinking innovatively and thinking differently is almost seen as being the preserve of the charter schools, and that the traditional public schools are stuck in this traditional mode.
Well, how do charter schools actually perform in the state? Perceptions, opinions aside, yeah. What does the data show? We've had a couple of people ask that question.
Yeah. So as you're aware, the state has a system of grading each school, including charter schools. And if you look at the data, the charter schools, in terms of receiving a grade of A, 7% of traditional public schools receive grades of A. Charter schools, 10% of charter schools receive a grade of A. At the other end, though, we've got sort of the reverse of that. In terms of F grades, 4% of traditional schools receive F grades. 8% of charter schools receive F grades.
So that sounds like an experimental model that may be working. I mean, you have to be willing to fail, right? You have to be willing to try things that could crash and burn if you're going to find new ways.
But we've taken it to such an extreme, you know, and I'm not speaking for other charter school people. I'm speaking for Lori Roy. When I say, you know, when we lifted that cap in 2010, it changed the way that charter schools were designed to be. Charter schools started popping up everywhere, and there are some great charter schools that have come up in Wilmington. Please don't take me wrong when I share the concern that I have, and I know many of my colleagues at CFCI have, is that we've lost the point. And the point of charter schools was to be a think tank, to be a laboratory, to try something different and then share it. And so instead of, obviously I have a very clear vested interest in charter schools, and I do see great value in charter schools, but instead of just more and more and more and more popping up, why don't we step back for a minute and look at the ones that are working and look at our traditional public schools that are working and figure out how we can bridge that gap and work together, because we're all in this for children. It is all about kids, and it's so frustrating. You know, you hear the grown-ups like talking about us versus them and money and all the things. When this is about kids,
right? Yeah,
plain and simple, this is about kids. There are fantastic teachers everywhere. My brother's one of them, and he's at Hoggard High School. There are great teachers everywhere.
And so you're talking about finding that pathway to this collaborative model, both from a funding point of view and a sharing best practices point of view.
If we end up with 300 charter schools in the state, that's not going to happen. And so that I have a concern about what this model that's kind of taken over the state and nation, really.
And Robert Smith, as you pointed out earlier, there were a lot of online charter schools started popping up, may or may not be so effective. And there were also a number of charter schools that opened and closed due to financial insolvency and possibly mishandling of funds. So are we loosening the requirements on charter schools? Is that what's happening?
And I wanted just to go back to the comment that you made about charter schools as being innovative, and isn't part of the expectation with that is that you're going to get some schools failing. And there has been significant concerns about the number of charter schools. Essentially, what we've had is it's much easier to provide support to open a school than it is to close a school. If you see these as being experimental schools, how long do you give an experiment before you make the hard decision that enough's enough? This is 3 years of underperforming, low performing, jeopardizing the success of these children's lives. And that's really the challenge. You can imagine the legislature all in favor of supporting new schools. But when it comes to who's going to be the hard guy to go in and say, enough's enough, we need to terminate you. And so that's a situation where we've had lax oversight for the creation of charter schools. I think we now in a better situation where they realize that this is not good for North Carolina. It's not certainly good for the children to have so many charter schools approved just because they provide choice. And again, that we go back to that idea that people, there's this ideological perspective that choice is good irrespective of the details of it. Whereas I would say, no, we need to think about the quality of the choices that we're providing before we just go straight forward. And that's something that we've had to learn the hard way. I'm not sure quite whether we're there with that.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Robert Smith, Lori Roy, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Caitlin Hanrahan, today's chief engineer. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast. Find it on the WHQR app or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.